the so-called progressive in this town. I will say so, whatever the outcome.
Well, I appreciate that, Bob, and I hope that in addition to that contempt, we're able to draw together a group of people who can, you know, do the things that unfortunately existing organizations won't do. And there is always the danger of co-option and corruption and that sort of thing, but I think, and exhaustion, and of course, factionalism.
Exactly. Look to issues being spun out. That there is a pattern here. Issues get spun out. They drag on. Just to use a sleeping ban as an example, the weather's warming. We haven't got to be proactive on this. We haven't got to look forward. When the real estate market begins to level out, you hear people say, well, we don't need rent control now.
Right.
It's predictable. It's boring. It deserves contempt.
Now, what about rent control over the hill? Anything new? I know you've been attending
There are meetings on the average of every 3 weeks. They have what I think is going to be a very interesting program. They're going to present the city council with a deadline. What are you doing about the rental situation? It's quite good, really. As to where they're going to go with all this, I think that this kind of politics, you do it because it's right, the bottom line. And maybe the elected officials will recognize some political importance in this and will get behind some of these issues.
Now, if people want more information on the San Jose rent control meetings, can they give you a call?
They most certainly can. 466-0500. I will be attending all the meetings that I can over the hill. I find what they're doing to be very exciting and timely. And anyone that wants a ride with me, I believe the next meeting is, I have it written down here somewhere, but it's the middle of March.
466-0500 to contact Bob LaMonica, who not only is working over the hill, but you've actually done some really, you've done some in-depth work here in Santa Cruz with an attempted initiative about a year and a half ago, and unfortunately the city council sat on its hands, as usual. Let's hope this time that we can get activists who don't sit on their hands and give you a call at 466-0500. Is there more you want to say about it?
Well, in regards to Over the Hill, they're after a couple of things here. Just Cause,
sure.
Ordinance, and the second thing is to demand of the city council to show what they're going to do for rent relief and give them a four-month deadline. This is very, very interesting how it's building over there. There's a process I think is very wise. The one thing about Over the Hill, you know the living wage, I think most people who see the broader picture would say that, yes, we need some sort of regulation. You do what you can do. And, of course, living wage impacts only those elements that contract to the government, right? It's a good thing. But living wage was happened over the hill years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it's taken longer here.
Right. Santa Cruz ain't cutting edge, friends.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a bandwagon that develops in San Jose, then I think you'll see some of the venerable bandwagon organizations here in Santa Cruz get behind it because I think maybe they can win. But when something comes outside of their arena that they don't control and they didn't initiate, you won't see any action.
Well, I would encourage those who want to, like yourself, Bob, who are interested in rent control, you look at the next city council meeting because there's a bunch of people coming to speak at Oral Communications this Tuesday at 7 o'clock around the 204 Riverside Apartments scandal, which, of course, is you've been, probably may have been following in the papers and on the tube. This is a favored group by city council and properly a focus on of community concern of Latino tenants who have been essentially had their rents boosted 100% in the last year. By this Rodriguez landlord guy, and the city is trying to do something about it. But instead, of course, proposing a citywide rent control ordinance, they're kind of trying to just simply pressure this one landlord. And it's not in my mind, it's not adequate. And also,
of course, it's not.
But still, yeah. This is a fertile place for
yeah.
you to go and talk. Not so much to the council, who couldn't care less, in my view, or regards you as one of the people on the fringe, as they regard me, but talk instead to the tenants and see if they want to, you know, and get involved themselves. And some of them do speak English.
Well, I want to say this too. I've said it time and time again today, even. But I express and maintain utter contempt for the lack of courage among those that want to call themselves progressive in this town. I didn't vote for any of the seven, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to Over the Hill activities on rent control and Just Cause, there will be a press conference the week of March 8th, which is about 2 weeks away.
Uh-huh.
There's a meeting, the next meeting, organizing meeting, is March 15th at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that wants a ride or wants more information, they can give me a call. I'll be happy to provide them with everything that I know. I think that what they're doing over the Hill is at least something.
And that's 466-0500.
Right. It's at least something, and it helps to push the envelope.
Right.
Okay, Robert, thanks a lot. All right.
Hey, thank you, Bob.
You bet.
And right, rent control, of course, is something we've needed here for a long time, but listening to venerable elders like Mike Rotkin and John Laird, nobody has done a thing about it, or certainly Mike Rotkin, who endlessly says, oh, we tried that in 1982, didn't work, so, or we couldn't get the votes. That's the old Sugar refrain. Keith Sugar's refrain on the sleeping ban was he wouldn't put it on the agenda because he didn't have the votes. Now, of course, they have the votes, and they still won't put it on the agenda. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. Hopefully you're on our agenda and we're on yours in terms of getting issues out there that need to be talked about. 423-4833. 423-4833 is the number off air, and the number on air, in case you want to call the studio directly, is 427-3772. 427-3772 to reach us here in the studio and to reach the community, because here's your chance to talk to everybody, not just me. Am I not telling it like it is? Hey, well, then you can tell it like it is. Am I telling it like it is and nobody's listening? Well, let me know you're listening and you agree. And call the city council. I know it sounds like a useless idea, but it's, it's just a phone call. 420-5017. Call them up and say, where the hell is sleeping ban repeal? What did you do? Did Tim Fitzmaurice, in fact, veto this, as the grapevine has it? Ed Porter reportedly was going to put something on the agenda, but apparently, again, I haven't got this directly because I'm considered to be the bad boy, and I don't get direct information, but it seems that there is certainly a rumor about, and I call it from an informed source, that Fitzmaurice vetoed putting sleeping ban repeal on the agenda, even though Ed Porter wanted it on as a discussion item. Now, Porter may have changed his own mind, or he may have been allowed Fitzmaurice to strong-arm him. He shouldn't, because every council member should have the right, and I think does have the right, to put items on the agenda. The only power the mayor has is to schedule what goes when and where, and that he can maybe push it off a meeting or two if necessary, or if it's really full, but he's supposed to simply be like the traffic cop, not the autocrat, not the emperor. But, of course, Emperor Tim sees things differently, and again, he has changed the dimensions of the council meeting, and indeed has barred activists like myself from even peaceful lobbying in city council offices. So we are indeed facing that situation at city council, and hopefully, however, there's going to be a group coming to city council on Tuesday. Now, it's not clear whether this new group, and they're the mainstream advocates, is going to be showing up or not, because I think they were hoping to have Ed Porter's have Ed Porter put the issue on the agenda, at least for discussion. And since he hasn't done that, I think now the plan is that they're still going to speak during the oral communications period, which may be very full, because the Riverside tenants of Riverside Avenue, the 204 Riverside folks, will be actually, from what I read from the agenda, they have their own separate agenda items, so we may be in luck on that. There may be more oral communications time on the agenda for everybody, and they won't try to wedge us all into a half an hour, as has been done in the past by Mayor Fitzmaurice. Yeah, there is a communication. Wait a minute. No, I'm sorry. I have to take that back. Nope. I don't see the 204 Riverside on the evening agenda, so we're all going to be crammed into the oral communications, both those opposing the sleeping ban, seeking some kind of repeal, and those seeking some kind of redress. And what they really want is rent control, but they're only talking about it for one group here, for the Riverside tenants. That's going to be this evening, I should say, on the February 27th, Tuesday evening, at 7 o'clock at the City Council, 809 Center Street. Well, I suggest people come. I suggest people come to City Council. Who knows? Maybe we'll get some hot soup there from one of those old soup slingers who still cares about homeless issues. It's certainly true that I'm glad to see at least one group is trying to bring the issue to public attention. It's not my group. I'm not even officially a member of this group in that way. But I'm happy to see that this is happening with these mainstream advocate people. I was talking about the Dolphin Lee, and I want to kind of conclude that because it is also on the agenda, and it's on the 7 o'clock agenda for the first time, the issue of the Soul Source Mercy Charities housing project, which was essentially rammed through city council by former council member Catherine Byers way back in the fall of 1999, ignoring proposals to build on vacant property. Her proposal was to tear down existing housing, build less units, spend $12.5 million, 5 years of affordable housing funds, without any guarantees that the people currently living there will be able to come back into the housing. That's kind of the nutshell. And that, of course, sucked big time. And they formed, in order to put the project forward, they had to form a tenant advisory committee, and they did. They formed the tenant advisory committee, which met and decided that they didn't want to have anything to do with this project until guarantees were granted. And then, of course, the city promptly shut down the tenant advisory committee, severed the Lee tenants, who were the more activist tenants from the Dolphin and Lee, bought the Rex Court across the street, which had been emptied by their friends in the Seaside Company so that it was vacant and deteriorated, but still usable and still rehabilitatable if they'd wanted to do so, but instead tore it down, according to the blueprint of Mercy Charities Housing, whose pet project this is, and whose dictates apparently city council follows in all things. Mercy Charities Housing has no public hearings. Mercy Charities Housing, even though it was mandated by the board or by the city council back in January to hold those Brown Act hearings, where Brown Act means the public can come in and speak, knows when the hearings are, was able to see the process. The Mercy Charities has refused to do this, continues to refuse to do this. They hold closed door meetings. And their claim is that they are afraid they'll be disrupted. You know, they have the right to evict anybody who's disruptive. They're afraid they'll be exposed. That's their problem. They're afraid they'll be asked embarrassing questions. They don't want that. That's their problem. They're afraid their authority will be challenged. And they're afraid that city council will have to respond to those embarrassing questions by stopping the sole source provider nonsense that they've been for the last half decade. You know, it's been shown that private groups could build the housing per unit at $100,000 less, but still the city council isn't interested. It's been shown there's vacant land they could build on that wouldn't destroy housing, but that, of course, is owned by the Seaside Company that wants to use it for commercial purposes. It could still be eminent domain, but instead it was changed back again to commercial use in a little noticed maneuver back in the fall, right before the elections. There's a whole scandal behind this. Scan the Santa Cruz Action Network, when the tenants came down and said, "What the hell are you guys doing?" passed a resolution that demanded the city council stop the whole project until the guarantees that all the tenants who were there will be able to come back to the new project or have some equivalent housing. The city council ignored this, severed the Lee tenants from the whole process, and proceeded to give Mercy Charities a huge chunk of money to buy this and do it in private. And that's what's going on right now. Now it's, and then they started having closed meetings about the Lee apartments, that is to say, they being the city council, which can't do that legally, about the Lee apartments, even though their last open meeting back in July, the last open meeting of the city council, had severed the Lee apartments. So there was no authorization to proceed in closed session with this. They still proceeded and have been proceeding. My letters to the redevelopment agency and Seal Cirillo have been left unanswered. And now suddenly the Lee apartments appears on the agenda. What's going on? Well, we don't know, because of every item on the agenda, the only item that does not have information on it is this item, number 28 of the 7 p.m. session. All it says is, resolution regarding relocation benefits for tenants residing at 124-126 Lee Brand Avenue in the event of displacement by a Beach Flats affordable housing development by Mercy Housing California, put on by Mayor Fitzmaurice. That the City Council adopt the resolution regarding relocation benefits for tenants residing at 124-126 Lee Brand Avenue in the event of displacement by a Beach Flats affordable housing development by Mercy Housing California. Note, written material will be provided prior to City Council. I don't see that appearing on any of the other items. Now, some background here. Probably the reason this is happening is because there are several tenants in the Lee apartments. In fact, many of the tenants in the Lee apartments would really like to be a part of an affordable housing project if, and I say if, they had real guarantees, ironclad legal guarantees that they would be able to come back to better housing. They'd also kind of like to have some involvement, real involvement, in how this project is put together and not just have to essentially rubber stamp the Mercy Charities housing proposal. And that's another issue that, of course, should have been dealt with by the city council, but hasn't been. But in terms of the key issue about just keeping your housing, keeping housing in some way, that is the key issue for me. And I think, was the key issue for SCAN, was the key issue for the tenants, and was the issue that the city council ducked last summer. Now, what they have done with the Dolphin is they have said that all legal residents will be allowed to continue their tenancy until the project begins. But they don't guarantee any of them a return to the project. They're just guaranteeing them continued housing until they start the project. And that guarantee also refers only to legal residents, where legal is undefined. We tried to get a definition put into that in October. I was assured by Elizabeth Vogel of Mercy Housing and by Mike Rotkin of the City Council that, oh, it means everybody who was there 2 months ago, whether they're on the lease or not. But they wouldn't put that into the resolution in writing. So once they proceed on this and begin a project, they can adopt a new definition of who can go into this housing, who can stay there, and who can't. And what they've been trying to do, and they did a month ago, they're trying to buy people out cheap so they move. For $5,250, they're offering people a buyout to get moving and get out of there and give up all their rights to any housing. And while that sounds like a fat chunk of change in terms of the housing costs here in Santa Cruz, single men who are paying $100 for a room now, and they're out there packed into a room, like they're paying, I know, for example, five brothers who are splitting a room in the Lee for $750 or maybe two rooms. And that's not much, but that's pretty cheap rent. That's $125 or something each, $150 each. Where are they going to find rent in Santa Cruz for $52.50 for any length of time? And the answer is they're not. And I don't know where they're going to find that kind of rent. In essence, it is a depopulation measure which moves inconvenient people out and onward. That's just how it is. And that is the basis on which this whole project has gone forward, is the assumption that a significant number of people can either be scared or bribed or exhausted, because now they're delaying the project for several years and there's all kinds of uncertainty around it, into moving on. Now, the legitimate upside of this, and I've talked to Mercy Charities housing advocates who strongly feel this is a good project for the tenants. I feel mistakenly feel this is a good project, but strongly feel it. They have said, and they're welcome to call in, by the way, Tamara, if you're listening, Tony Madrigal, if you're listening, Tim Fitzmaurice, if you're listening, you are welcome to call in and confute these facts. You will have your say, I promise you, if you're willing to speak about it on these airwaves. And of course, usually we don't get Mercy Charities housing advocates who call in because I think they don't feel their arguments are strong enough. But I could be wrong in this case, and I'd like to see these people call in. They're now trying to involve the Lee tenants, the people who originally formed Residentes Unidos, the people who said, we want real guarantees, the people who put backbone and who were sliced out of the deal by the city council, who did not want to face the demands of the Lee tenants, the people for whom the city council shut down the entire process of the tenant advisory committee under the questionable leadership of Yolanda Goda last summer in June and July, wouldn't allow a meeting of this tenant advisory committee and then just snuffed it because they were saying, we don't want any project without the guarantees, and they wouldn't even talk. The city council would not discuss or pass the guarantees. Now on the agenda are the guarantees, and you say, oh, well, this is a great step forward. Maybe we're moving ahead. I've seen a rough draft of these so-called guarantees. They use the same language as before. They use first preference. And what this means is Mercy Charity says everybody who's there will get first preference in coming back to the housing. Well, first preference means they'll be at the top of the list before they get sliced off the list by other considerations. They don't get guaranteed return. They get first preference in returning to the list, to the housing. That doesn't mean they get any kind of guarantee. And so I've said to Mercy Charities workers or people who are working with this project, hey, get it together and look for a real guarantee. A couple other things that I'm going to talk about, but here's a caller.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, it's Scott.
Hey, Scott Graham.
How you doing?
I'm good. Have you been listening?
What?
Have you been listening to my tirade?
No, I haven't.
Ah, well.
I've been radioless car.
Oh, well, I've just been talking about this item number 20. What is it? Item 28. Do I have that right? It's the Lee property discussion coming up. Item 28 on the evening agenda of the City Council.
Oh, it's not on redevelopment, huh?
No, yeah, not on redevelopment. It's a communication from council. And what's happening here is I believe they're going to put on the agenda. We haven't seen the papers because this is the one item that we don't have the documentation for. They don't have it yet, they say. and probably they're trying to work it out. And that's I'm raising the issue of some suspicion because it's not there, but there is, I think, also a legitimate reason too. The people who are working this out with some of the lead tenants have talked to you and me and others and are trying, they say, and I believe that they believe they're sincere, to guarantee some things for the tenants so that they can really enter into this Dolphin Lee project.
Right.
And there is a meeting of Residentes Unidos tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at 124 Lee Brandt Street, to which Mercy Charities people, the city council members, I believe, are also invited, although that's always risky because Sugar did, offend.
Take over the meeting.
Well, yeah, he took over the meeting, and he made the statements that he really never, I think, adequately apologized for about people being packed in like sardines and they can go back to Mexico.
Well, he never apologized to the people themselves,
right.
You know. I mean, he apologized to some reporter,
mm-hmm.
and but the reason I called is that I'm calling about Robert Stephan.
Oh, okay.
And I've just heard word from the local mailman on the downtown route.
Right.
Okay.
I'm hearing some flack in the background there. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, ignore that first thing.
Yes. You heard from an informed source,
an anonymous source.
Yes,
that some public relations police officer on the downtown mall,
mm-hmm.
is going around getting businesses to sign a complaint against Robert Stephan so they can get him some sort of court action to get him barred from downtown. Well, they claim it's to get him help. I think it's to get him off the mall.
Robert Stephan, for those who have forgotten, is the man in the plastic bag near, I guess, So Say We Cafe in the bookshop Santa Cruz. You can often see him on the bench with his presidential platform, kind of on a little portable shopping cart. He's in a black polyethylene trash bag, sitting on the bench there. Has been there, or near another bench up the block, for about a year and a half now, I think it is. He's kind of got the endurance record. I mean, he leaves at night, but he's usually there invariably there during the day.
Right.
And he doesn't say much. I mean, I think he used to say, "Hello, sir. Good morning, sir."
Right. But, "Have a nice day, sir."
"Have a nice day, sir," but he doesn't say much anymore. And there are some merchants who profess to be concerned about his mental health, and I suggested that they get together and support, campgrounds, and maybe offer him a place in a house or something else if they really are concerned. I think they're concerned about the appearance of their spiffy mall, but
right, and they're afraid that he's defecating and urinating right there in his sleeping bag or something.
You know, I keep hearing that, but I have been past him numerous times. Maybe I've just got a cold, but I don't think I really have that much of a cold, if I do have a cold at all. Have you smelled anything untoward about Robert Stephan?
Not really, no.
Well, I smell the stench of hypocrisy and money in the air, as usual, I'm afraid. That's what the real smell is. Jumping back to this other topic, or is there more to say about Robert Stephan?
No, I just wanted to put that out there, that there is this move afoot to do something about him.
Right.
In the name of helping him.
Of course. That they're going to help, they just want to help, like help out those Dolphin Lee tenants.
Help them move along.
Help them to move right along. Yeah, that's how it is. I was pointing out to the public here and to the listening audience, Scott, and you've been following the Dolphin Lee case for quite a while.
Right.
And hope you'll be there tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Residente Unidos meeting.
Yeah, I'm going to try to be.
That'll be good. And anybody's invited, that's again at 124 Lee Brandt. That's the building right next to the Dolphin, down half a block from the beach boardwalk on the Lee Brandt Street. 7 o'clock Monday. And again, the discussion is going to be, what about these guarantees that I think well-intended, but I think rather naive people are passing around, suggesting that the Lee tenants take. And,
right.
And I guess you and I looked at these guarantees.
And as written, they're not guarantees.
Right.
That's the big problem.
What we did was I presented, and I guess you were in on this process six, 8 months ago. You were there for the formation of some of this. A legal kind of translation of the guarantees that the Lee tenants were seeking and the Residentes Unidos was seeking back in June and July.
Right.
And that actually talks about a specific legal contract to be made out with each tenant, which guarantees them either a place in the new housing or adequate money to subsist for the period of time, I guess it's 42-month buyout.
Right.
is what that is. And that would be, of course, in realistically speaking, preposterously expensive for the city, and they would never do that. So instead, they're going to try the more illegitimate tactic of a cheap buyout, $52.50, and they're not even going to give guarantees because that would offend Mercy Charities Housing, which wants the ability to black pencil the tenants,
right,
or red pencil the tenants, I guess the word is, redline them, I don't know what the phrase is. Mercy Charities has, we have shown on this station, with some of its other projects, moved people out, claimed they had first preference, and then not allowed them back in.
Right.
And they have also had standards around felonies and other concerns that supposedly will disqualify them if they try to get back in. And we were able through pressure and through tenant organizing to get them to moderate these things somehow. But they're still in a position where they're making demands on the tenants about you know their criminal histories that really have nothing to do with what a landlord should be asking about. And you know, you can say, well, why should we dictate to Mercy Charities Housing what they should do? And the answer is, it's not that we're trying to dictate it to them. We're saying, don't destroy their housing unless you're going to give them something back.
Right. I mean, that's been my stance all along, is that currently these people have a place to live, and it's affordable. And so if they build a project that won't accommodate everybody, then how are they claiming they're helping people? You know, they're helping some of the people, but they're not planning on helping everybody, and that seems to be the sticking point with me anyway.
Well, at 204 Riverside, this is, of course, it's not just a boogeyman, it is a real frightening situation that has developed. We see that if some landlords in the beach flats are indeed going berserk on raising rents.
Right.
What do you say to Tim Fitzmaurice and other people who say we are trying to make sure that at least some of the tenants are protected, and this will indeed keep people in subsidized housing in perpetuity for a smaller number perhaps, but for a definite number? How can you, Scott Graham, guarantee that the Dolphin, what other solution do you suggest the city do to protect the Dolphin and Lee from tenants from rent raises?
Well, a couple of years ago when they were looking at all the various possibilities, they laid out five possibilities, then Catherine Byers snuck in, well, we can just designate the Glee right now, the Dolphin Lee project right now. I and a few other people were promoting the idea of the city taking this $12.5 million and just buying property with it. Don't build anything right now. Just buy up the property and then find money later on to actually build projects. And they could have bought the Dolphin and the Lee. They could have bought this other property where people are now having problems and many other properties in the beach flats. If that was their real goal, was to maintain the community that's there now and the affordability, spending this $12 million bucks just procuring property would have been their best option, especially in the last 2 years, property values have doubled. So they would have, 2 years ago, if they had taken that strategy, they could have bought up a lot more property than they could today.
But given that they've done what they've done, that they purchased or given their money to Mercy Charities to purchase the Dolphin and the Rex Court, is Mercy Charities bought the Rex Court, or does the city have the Rex Court? I'm not sure.
The city owns the Rex Court.
Well, given that they've got those two properties, they purchased the Rex Court and demolished were probably usable housing on them, and they had given the money to.
Well, there's people living under bridges that would have just as soon lived there, I'm sure.
Right. What can they do now, given the existing status quo, that would be preferable to, let's say, a Dolphin Lee project where they demolish
the
Lee?
Well, they could still buy a property with this $12 million. Instead of just buying the Lee as an addition to the Rex Court and the Dolphin, they could continue to buy property in the beach flats, spend the $12.5 million on just property purchases, and then find money after that to actually build projects. I still think that that's the best avenue, is to buy up as much property as possible.
Well, are you suggesting that they buy the Lee and run it, like they give Mercy Charities the Lee to run as an existing apartment building? Or?
Well, I don't know who, you know, they're not at that point yet, but, you know, I imagine if they go forward with this, the Mercy's going to end up running it anyway. And so I'm not sure if they should just hand all this stuff over to Mercy or not. Or I would prefer to go up to an RFP and find out if there's another housing provider out there that could do the same job for less money, or, you know, come up with a better, more inclusive project.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that you're going to be told again and again, and then the argument you'll have to answer on Tuesday, and I suspect you will be at the city council meeting
right.
at 7 o'clock when it appears on the agenda immediately after oral communications, is how are you going to protect the tenants if Lee sells out to somebody else and they raise the rents just like they did at 204 Riverside? How can that be stopped, and what is your answer going to be?
Well, they can buy it. I mean, that's what I'm advocating. I'm advocating they buy as much property as possible.
Okay, but they buy it with the proviso that Mercy Charities Housing not evict any of the tenants.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I see. So you don't see any problem with the Lee property changing hands to the city or to Mercy Charities. Your concern is that it not be demolished.
Well, my concern is that it does, you know, that it does become some place that remains affordable. And as we can see, the market forces aren't going to allow that to happen. And I think if the city can buy up as much property as possible in the Beach Flats, then they can continue a commitment to the people that live there. And to just say, oh, we're only going to do this one little project and blow our whole wad on that and leave the rest of Beach Flats up to market forces is absurd. They should be buying as much as they possibly can now and find money for the projects later. Yep. I mean, the money's there. The money's all over the place, you know. It's but right now they have $12.5 million. So I think still they should buy property with it.
Have you approached Councilmember Ed Porter or your old pal Mark Premack with this suggestion?
Not personally.
I know that Christopher Crone used to hold these meetings on Monday at 6 o'clock at the Paragolisi. I guess he hasn't for the last 2 or 3 months.
Right.
Have you talked to Councilmember Christopher Crone about this issue?
No, I haven't talked to any of them about it.
Hmm. Well, hey, time to start lobbying there, Scott Graham.
I guess so. Anyway, I have to get going, Robert.
Well, remember, okay, we should keep an eye out for Robert Steffen to make sure he isn't hauled away in a bag.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
If wishes were horses, beggars would ride, and rich and poor in peace would abide. If only the poor would smell sweet and be neat and clean up the street and talk nice and polite and not publicly fight and have college degrees and station wagon keys and interesting jobs that are also secure, or else kept out of sight, and learn to endure. There'd be nothing wrong with that, just being cool. There'd be nothing wrong with that, just being. If wishes were horses, beggars would beggars would ride. Wishes were horses, beggars would ride. Wishes were horses, beggars would ride. Just being poor.
Inner City again. Great album. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, talking about lots of things. Civil rights for folks who are outside, civil rights in terms of the right not to be kicked out of your apartment because the landlord decides he wants to pop in some dot-commers. Lots of rights that we don't have in Santa Cruz that we need and how to get them. That's really what this is all about. Upcoming meetings, 4 o'clock, Green Party Homeless Working Group at 525 Palm Street, Bonnie Moore's house. The older homeless working group, 6 o'clock, Baker's Square today, the restaurant downtown on Ocean Street. Tomorrow, 7 o'clock, Residentes Unidos at 124 Lee Brandt Street, talking about the Lee apartments and how to make sure that the tenants there keep their guarantees or keep their housing. And then tomorrow at City Council at 7 o'clock, sleeping ban discussion from oral communications. I believe that's what's going to happen since the Ed Porter has either not been allowed or chosen not to put it on the agenda. And then at 7:30 or 45, council discussion of a resolution for the Lee tenants about guaranteeing them some real return and real relocation benefits, though they're only actually talking about relocation benefits, and we haven't actually seen the resolution. And hopefully the resolution will be discussed at this meeting. We're hoping that Tamara and Tony and other individuals who are of close associations with Mercy Charities, indeed, they may sit on the Mercy Charities Housing Board, I think, or at least certainly are invited to their meetings while the rest of us are not, will be at this Residentes Unidos meeting to talk about these issues. There's also been some concern, and I want to say this since I want to be even-handed, that at least one of the Lee residents has been stopped from circulating a petition that is in favor of this project, or petition isn't quite the word, a set of proposed guarantees to see what the tenants want, that she was intercepted going door to door by the manager, and insofar as this is true, I strongly condemn it, and in fact I push to see that this meeting tomorrow happens so that the tenant who is circulating this set of guidelines who favors the Dolphin Lee project should be able to present her perspective without coercion, without intimidation, in a free and open setting, without the threat of any kind of retaliation. And of course, I can't guarantee that, but I'm certainly hoping that that's not going to, in a group meeting, there will be more both support for the tenants and hopefully more educational activity, because I think the proposed guarantees, quote-unquote, have to be looked at very, very carefully. We've been through this three-card Monte game before, and it's time to not have to go through the whole thing again. Looks like we will have to go through it again, but we should have learned from that last time just what's going on and what's required. If they want to provide guarantees, let them provide real guarantees, not the semblance of guarantees. So, 7 o'clock tomorrow night, 124 Lee Brandt Street, Residentes Unidos. Then, of course, 7 o'clock Tuesday, you have the City Council oral communications on the sleeping ban and the rent control situation, Riverside Apartments, and 7:30 or 45, the Lee Apartments, and the need to have guarantees, real guarantees, and possibly to support Scott Graham's alternate proposal, which is that the city purchase this property and continue to allow livable rents for the tenants, but buy up, instead of spending all this money for Mercy Charities Housing's showcase project, its little apple of my eye dumpling project, that they buy a lot of property and then look for grants and funding to build affordable housing on it, since the land is really going to be the key here. If you're interested in proposing this to City Council as well as ending the sleeping ban, the number to call is 420-5017. Just say no purchase of the Lee property without real substantive contract by contract guarantees, and better to build, spend your money on the property, don't give it all away to Mercy Housing. And on the sleeping ban, of course, and the sleeping ban. You know, you just got to start there. I don't know where else you start. And then you proceed to deal with shelter problems and other laws that criminalize the homeless and other problems. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We only got 10 minutes left. We may have enough time to play the rest of this interview with Mickey Ryan of Portland. She is an attorney up there who we played some of the interview of. Portland is the city that threw out its entire camping ordinance thanks to local Judge Gallagher. We talked about a variety of subjects, including Camp Dignity, the camp that has been moving from place to place because the police move it onward, but still they continue. They have a website. They're doing fundraisers. They're holding together their community. Santa Cruz could do worse than have something similar to that. Let's hear what Mickey Ryan has to say.
In San Francisco in the early 90s, police attacked Food Not Bombs. You may have read about it in the papers.
We had a problem with them up here too.
They accused them of not applying for a health permit when in fact they had, and they'd actually gotten permits, and then the city's Parks and Rec removed the permit process because the mayor was embarrassed about people being fed in public spaces, and it showed how ineffective their policies were for eliminating poverty and hunger. And what happened when it got to court was, though there was, you know, the courts essentially, the view that I had, because I was also involved in this process, I was arrested and convicted for serving free food, was that it was essentially corrupt. Because while police were actually beating up people, and we couldn't get civil lawsuits heard in California on this issue. I mean, they tried time and time.
And through it, you know how they'll dismiss it. They'll do all kinds of things.
Right. And I'm wondering if you have a similar corrupt court system, or I call it corruption. I'm really reduced to that phrase as I look over this massive denial that goes on here in California, at least in San Francisco. How's it in Portland?
Well, I don't think, I'm just getting back to the Food Not Bombs. We had a problem with them being cited. They had a lovely place. It was under a bridge, but it happened to be right near our touted light rail line. It was at one of the stops. And there was a huge sidewalk, but they were cited for obstructing the sidewalk. That was three times the area of what anyone was.
What year was this?
Oh, I'm thinking probably 4 or 5 years ago.
And did that stop Food Not Bombs?
They, it didn't for a while, but eventually I'm afraid that it did cause them. I haven't seen them around in a while.
Did they win? Because I heard Food Not Bombs is actually serving food to Camp Dignity.
Oh, that's great.
Uh-huh.
They didn't continue setting up at the same location. I believe they have a long-time location in Southeast Portland, but this was a place downtown, which, you know, is where the tourists are, so...
Uh-huh. Have that.
Yeah. But anyway, in terms of the court system, what we found is that the courts don't know how to deal with these cases when we get involved, because they treat them like a traffic ticket, and they're not used to seeing lawyers in there. It became a political hot potato. What I saw was fear. Police not showing up in one-way cases would get dismissed. They would just set over the case, the other side, for, you know, they basically try to wear you down in some way or another.
Is there a way, I assume there is a way, to seek a court order alleging all these as essentially a form of harassment against homeless people asserting constitutional rights? And is there a way of getting a broad injunction against this kind of...
Yeah, well, it's tough in terms of the court system. They don't like to be enjoined.
Right, they don't want to enjoin themselves.
Right. So, but I think what we did by just hanging in there was it got more efficient. The court had to deal with it. But I know that, you know, in one case, the major case that we thought we were going to get this decision on, a judge heard everything but closing argument, and then he had a capital case, actually, he was doing the next day, so he said, well, we'll have you come back and do closing argument when I can schedule it. And 8 months later, the judge called the presiding judge, and I got a letter from the presiding judge saying, the judge doesn't have time to do this. We're going to have to send it to another judge and retry it.
Isn't there a thing called pulling your time waiver and demanding a speedy trial? I mean...
Well, we agreed to have another judge, then we had to transcribe the trial, have another judge make a decision on that record. Another time, a case got sent to a judge, and the judge recused himself, saying, I had a bad experience with a homeless person, and so I don't want to, you know, do this case unless you really want me to do it. And I said,
in other words, I'm a bigot.
I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel comfortable. So it's this kind of thing. I mean, luckily, people that do our kind of work, you know, take this as the way the legal system works all the time. And almost any of the cases we take are not, you know, well favored, and we're not going to be, you know, going to cocktails with the judges afterwards. So we just, you know, plow on, and eventually I think the system is small enough here. I don't think that it is, it may be inept, but it's not corrupt. So if you plow on long enough, they're forced to deal with you.
Unless you die along the way.
Exactly.
They notice you're a skeleton out there, and then they just,
right.
And that's littering. And, so.
I mean, every time I think of some of the things that have happened through the years, I mean, it's just amazing. And you know, I had practiced law for 15 years before that. Thought I'd think about everything, so I started getting.
How long have you been involved with the homeless civil rights cases?
Well, we started pretty much 6 or 7 years ago. We had a group of advocates and camping ordinance, and in that process, we managed to get some concessions, but not a not an agreement to stop enforcing. We managed to get them to promise to give people 24-hour notice,
which is a statewide requirement now, right?
It is now, yeah. But we started out by going and negotiating this out, and also got public money to pay for camper outreach. So that there's somebody actually going down and trying to house people, and folks don't have to go through shelter, they don't have to go to the social service agency. They can gain whatever access there is to the very limited housing through someone coming to them, and that's been a good program. It's expanded from, I think we had started out with, you know, half a person, and now it's going to be even maybe 3 people.
And how many people actually get housing each year through that program?
A good number of people do. I'm not sure about the numbers, but they're very productive, and the city sees it as a good investment. Unfortunately, you know, there's not that much housing out there. So
California has a huge rent crisis. Rents are doubling almost in Santa Cruz in certain areas each year, and we're just...
Yeah, I can't imagine.
What's happening in Oregon? Is that the similar
situation? Well, I know about Santa Cruz. I can't imagine folks trying to live there. And Portland has seen huge rent increases, particularly in the last 10 years. And so we're dealing with some of that now. And the loss as our downtown has gentrified and other areas of town gentrified, the loss of housing, and there's a whole... bunch of folks working on those issues.
You have the business improvement districts that run around with their little ambassadors or hosts or guides or whatever they are.
Yeah, the greenies.
The greenies. Okay.
Yeah, they have green jackets.
Kind of harassing homeless people and pretending to be polite to everybody else. That's
yeah, right. One of the things they do is, you know, somebody will be just sitting on the street with their backpack or whatever, and they'll just stand on the side of the person to kind of try to intimidate them into moving. So it's, but yeah, they're doing that job, which is paid for by business interests.
Wow. We've been talking to Mickey Ryan of the Oregon Law Center. You've been at this for how long now?
6 or 7 years on this issue.
Do you see any, if you were to look at your victories, you've already mentioned the 24-hour move-along, I guess at least a warning on that issue. You've mentioned housing, outreach. I guess the Gallagher decision is a victory, although, I mean, has it resulted in less harassment of homeless people, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think that Camp Dignity has been tremendously important in protecting people and bringing the issue. So I think that the two things have kept the issue in the top of people's mind. And, you know, I think that the police are, you know, they read the papers. And I think that they have to see that if they do anything really horrible that's going to get out, that it's going to look really bad right now. So I, you know, again, it's just a matter of degree.
Right.
But, and we've heard some bad things too, particularly. usually right after the decision. I know that folks in the group talked about some stuff. We felt like there was a backlash right there, but and again, they would know more than I would, but I have the sense that the police are being a little careful right now.
And you are preparing a possible court challenge to...
We're looking at that option because we, can't see we have any other options, really.
And that was Attorney Mickey Ryan of Portland, Oregon, talking about the Gallagher decision, which threw out the entire Portland camping ordinance because it, according to Judge Gallagher, regarded homelessness as a crime itself, and you can't regard homelessness as a crime, and in fact, one has to sleep at night. That is not a form of voluntary behavior. Apparently, these judges are at least a century ahead of our local judges who say it's okay to criminalize sleeping at night because, to quote Judge Tom Kelly, you can sleep in the daytime. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. A little red hen is usually coming in around this time, and we are hoping that the two hens will show up, but haven't seen any sign of them yet, so here's a little more from Inner City and potentially another interview coming up unless and until we hear the clucking of the little red hen.
It is hard to do without a man's smell in the house. But there's something about a man smells different from a woman. More like a horse. But good and sweet. Last night I need a man back in the house so bad I could not sleep at all. And could hardly wait for it to be morning. And the kids get up and just everything to do. I turn over in bed and I play a game. If you have to have one man, just one man in the house for the rest of your life, who would it be? Now, I would not take the first one. And he's so surprised to find that I had never been before. And I would not take Mr. Big Sport either. Have another drink, girl. Okay, girl, come on now, let's go. But the one I would want to keep, I know who that would be. The one who first took me during my time and I was hurting inside. No, I say we gotta wait. But he touched me so gentle. Oh, so gentle and just relaxed me all out. Now she's flowing, he said. Beautiful, beautiful river. Beautiful, beautiful woman river. And I love him for that. But nobody could ever say anything bad to me about that man. In the night, I remember. There I am reaching for you, wanting to turn to you. That's all I want. Oh, so much. Deep in the night. I wait for daylight. Daytime's always get through. But when the sun goes down, that's when I feel cold and old. Deep in the night. Hold me, I read a book and I think
did not try someone new. It didn't work out, I know. Don't I know? Because I tried. Deep in the night, I need you beside me. When I go to school by day, I snore, snore, snore. The teacher passes by me and she sniffs, sniffs, sniffs.
And another selection from Inner City, the original cast recording with Laura Kasha, Joseph Kipnis, Tom O'Horgan, music by Helen Miller, lyrics by Eve Miriam. And it's, way back in 1971 and 72 that they staged that. Looks like a Broadway hit. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. About an hour and a half ago, I played you a selection from the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, and what some women had to say about the sleeping ban and other ordinances and police practices targeting homeless people and homeless women. Tim Fitzmaurice, or Mayor Tim, or Emperor Tim, as some of us call him, was also at that meeting, and he made a statement. And unfortunately, what's really notable is what's absent from his statement. Let's hear a little bit about from Tim's appearance at the public hearing of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. This assumes, of course, that we can find the right tape, and actually we do have it here.
So if anyone else wanted to make a presentation, we'd more than welcome that.
I wouldn't make a presentation if it would take away from the time from anyone else testifying tonight. But I want to say thank you to the Commission for 20 years of service, to all the former commissioners who aren't here to hear that thanks. I hope we're able to give them that thanks sometime this year, because this is the anniversary of a remarkable institution in our community. Yeah, I'm Tim Fitzmaurice. I'm the mayor. And I've heard a lot of comments about city council. I hope you will write your report and let me hear those comments one more time. And I certainly will respect whatever your views are on all of these matters that have been brought forward. I want to thank you very much for combining with me to address our recent letter to Kate Canlis, the new district attorney, because this is an optimal moment for our community to say to the district attorney that we need more help with domestic violence. I think our specific interest was in restraining orders and making sure that those restraining orders are prosecuted when they're broken. We've had a problem with the prosecution of restraining orders in the county. We're hoping that the new task force in the district attorney's office can address that, help us to address that problem. The district attorney will be here to visit with you. I think they've expressed that in their response to me, that they would like to come here and hear your advice on that and to talk with you about how the best way to do those things. I know that I've said this before. I come forward partially because a friend of mine was murdered 5 years ago by her husband, and I'll say it one more time because I'll probably say it every time. This gentleman is in prison right now, but he is in one of the minimum security prisons in California. I expect that he will be released in the next few years. It's absolutely...
And mercifully, the little red hen has arrived. That was Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, and as you can hear, he's got some nice things to say and a nice voice and some commendations for a nice group, and it's all very nice. Unfortunately, his policies around the homeless are not nice at all. Tune in for more details and come to these meetings at 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock today, 7 o'clock tomorrow, and 7 o'clock on Tuesday. And join us at Bathrop Spears Broadside, 6 o'clock on Thursday night, off air 423-4833. Thank you very much, and Sailor Little Red Hen.
Gypsy came from Texas, blown in on the breeze, to Northern California, the redwood trees. He saw the deep green rolling of a mighty coastal range. Something deep inside began to change.
the so-called progressiveness.